Going beyond the headlines to the deeper issues. 96.3 WHUR and HUR Voices, Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Inside Segment, where your questions and comments matter at 202-319-7810. Join the conversation.
Welcome back to a special edition of the Daily Drum on WHUR and Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Inside Segment. I'm Harold Fisher.
Come to Baltimore. Do not just criticize us, but come to Baltimore and I promise you, you will be welcome. I promise you, we will give you every bit of hospitality we've got. Because every time you come to Baltimore, that means somebody in this neighborhood is working. It gives them hope.
That's Maryland Congressman Elijah Cummings earlier this year responding to President Trump after he denounced the city of Baltimore. Cummings passed away this morning after a storied career in the House of Representatives. He was 68 years old. Tonight we're going to hear from people who knew him well, and we will also examine his political legacy. We also want to hear from you tonight. Lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. You can tweet us using the hashtag WHURFM. Joining me in studio is Dr. Ravi Perry. He is chair of the Department of Political Science here at Howard University. Also, Michelle. She is an award-winning comedian, a Baltimore native, and a social justice advocate. We want to talk, first of all, about Congressman Cummings' political legacy, Dr. Perry. He was 68 years old, and for the newest generation of political activists, that may seem to be quite old. But the reality is that his iconic political push, his being an advocate, his being a civil rights leader, really crossed generations.
It certainly did. He was someone who was able to reach across not only the bipartisan aisle, but the age divide. He was not only as a lawyer in the city of Baltimore before he ran for state rep in the House of Delegates there, where he served from 83 to 96 before he was elected to Congress. And in each of these roles, he always was the champion of young people, of the underserved, of the marginalized, and of those folks who were often left out, seniors, particularly poor seniors in the Baltimore community. And he was able to resonate with all of them. And I think the reason why is because at the center and cornerstone of his message was that ultimately I am, for him, a man of the people. And he really lived that out every single day. And I would like to believe that, you know, his education here at Howard in the late 60s to 73, where he graduated with a B.A. in political science here, that is really what propelled him into service. He was a proud graduate of Howard University and of the political science department in particular. He was educated here in the late 60s, early 70s by some of the most esteemed faculty members and black folks who have learned about politics in the world. This generation of African-American political scientists that were in our department in the late 60s and early 70s were literally the progenitors, the leaders, the developers of what we know as black politics. And so for us in political science, it's a sad day, but it's also not a surprise that this giant became a beacon of black politics and American politics after leaving our department, in which he was exposed to what black politics is and how we can use politics to improve the lived conditions of everyday people.
Michelle, as a Baltimore native, what did Cummings mean to you and your peers, your friends?
Well, I can say this. He was, you know, you hear about your representatives being on Capitol Hill and you see sound bites and you see their names in the lower thirds of every screen and you hear, you know, just small bites of things that they say that are riveting and moving and nostalgic. But Elijah Cummings in Baltimore was a native son. Like, he literally was from and of the city. It, you know, you, and this is no disrespect to any other Representatives who live in different cities, but demographically speaking, he could have lived anywhere in Baltimore. Mm-hmm. He could have moved to the outskirts of the city, just on the tip of the city. He could have moved to Howard County because his district stretched that far. So he could have lived in Howard County, you know, but he opted as a native son to stay in the neighborhood that used to be known as Marble Hill. Marble Hill was the home of Thurgood Marshall, was the home of Clarence Mitchell and Perrin Mitchell, and was the home of so many activists and so many forward-thinking Baltimoreans who impacted not just the city, but whatever it you know, whatever office they held. You know, we know Thurgood went on to have an amazing career as an attorney and then as the first African-American chief justice. But he lived in that neighborhood, even when that neighborhood, for lack of better language, lost its shine.
202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Tonight, we are taking a look at the life and the political legacy of Maryland Congressman Elijah Eugene Cummings, of course, passing away this morning at the age of 68. On the phone right now, we have Maryland Congressman Anthony Brown. Congressman Brown, thank you for joining us.
It's great to be on. It's a sad day, certainly in Maryland and America. You know, I'm just glad to be on to share a little bit about how much I appreciate and love and will certainly miss my good friend Elijah Cummings.
Talk to me about the impact that he has had on your political career.
You know, Elijah has been in my political career since the beginning. I was elected in 1998, sworn in 1999. He had already left Annapolis for Washington, D.C., but while he didn't show up daily in Annapolis, his influence, his presence didn't leave Annapolis. There were so many who had benefited from his service in the House of Delegates. So when I got there, folks were still talking about Elijah and how he was the model of public service. So I reached out to Elijah. And I didn't know much about him, and I traveled to his office in Baltimore, and he had some real good advice for me. He said, you know, you can get real smart on the policy, and you can have a firm grasp of the politics and the protocols of and the practice of government, but if you don't stay close to the people, if they don't know who you are and you don't know who they are, then you are not going to be an effective public servant. And he said to me, just be sure to always tell your story. And nobody told their story better than Elijah Cummings. He shared his personal struggles as well as his successes. And, and I think he taught all of us, as he used to say, you know, we're better than that. Whether you were having your best day or your worst day, he inspired us to be even better. He's going to be missed, and today was a sad day on Capitol Hill.
You've had an opportunity to observe him politically since being in Congress, and talk to me about him as a strategist. And this is why I ask, because when U.S. Senator from Maryland Barbara Mikulski announced that she was going to leave the Senate back in 2016, 2017, and I had an opportunity to talk with Congressman Cummings quite a bit, interviewing him and just talking to him when we would see each other at events. And the thing that I asked him was, is that a seat that you want? And his response to me was, no, because I can do so much more in the House, where I am now, I can be so much more effective. And I think that really, as we have seen, that was, can we call it a prophecy that really bore a great deal of fruit?
Yes, and his decision not to run certainly was for the benefit of the House and to the American people. When I was elected to Congress in 2016 and I was sworn in 2017, I said to Elijah, if you ever consider running for U.S. Senate, and I hope you do, you can count me in as your first endorsement. And he basically looked at me and said the same thing that he said to you. He said, Anthony, I'm in a place where I can make a really big difference for the people who I love in Baltimore City, for the state that I love in the great state of Maryland, and for America. And that's what we had seen, and that's, you know, throughout his time in Congress. He had what few of us have. And when I say us, I mean, you know, elected public officials. He has a keen intellect to understand complicated issues, to break them down into their component parts, and to just address them. But to do that in a way where he can also balance his passion. We all know about Elijah Cummings' passion. He had a fiery passion that he could use, and we saw on full display when he was advocating, whether it was for a fair review of what happened in Benghazi, whether it's fighting for prescription drugs. But he also had a calming passion, which we saw in the streets of Baltimore right after the Freddie Gray incident. So he brought passion to intellect, and you got a leader that is seen in few of us.
You know, you make a really interesting point there. And as a matter of fact, earlier today, I had a chance to speak to former Baltimore City Mayor Stephanie Rawlings Blake. She is part of a huge political family, and I asked her about Congressman Cummings, and this is what she shared with me.
He served in the House of Delegates in the state legislature with my father, and so I've known him since elementary school, middle school. I mean, it has been a long time, and during my life, he was a close friend of my father's and became a friend of mine over the years and a colleague in public service. And he's someone who always had my back when I needed him in D.C., in Congress. He was always a straight shooter, always generous with his advice and his time.
He was a very significant figure during the Freddie Gray crisis. Talk to me about that time for you.
Yeah, I mean, look,
it was turbulent time. And what I knew is that everyone had their role to play. As mayor, I was very focused on making sure that we were able to maintain peace, coordinating with all of the security, the public safety agencies, the other jurisdictions. There were a lot of balls to keep up in the air. So to have someone like Congressman Cummings understanding that and willing to step in where he could, I certainly appreciated it. You know, at a time when, you know, I certainly could not be everywhere, he was willing to step in, to be a voice of a moral authority, to be the voice of calm, and it was very helpful.
Congressman Brown, 30 seconds before I get a break, some last thoughts from you about Congressman Cummings.
Congressman Cummings, whether Republican, Democrat, or independent, whether a freshman in Congress or someone who's been there as long as Speaker Pelosi, everybody holds Elijah Cummings in the highest regard. He was a moral compass, called all of us to do what is right. He is going to be sorely and sadly missed. And don't ask about who's going to fill his shoes, because whoever succeeds him needs to bring their own shoes, because you'll never fill the shoes that Elijah Cummings filled.
Well put. Maryland 4th Congressional District Congressman Anthony Brown, thank you so much for spending some time with us, and we appreciate your service and your work on the Hill. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
I need to take a break, but when we come back, more about the life and the political legacy of Maryland Congressman Elijah Eugene Cummings. Stay with us. The Daily Drum will continue on Sirius XM, Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. Jeff Brown is next with the original Quiet Storm on WHUR. But this conversation continues on Sirius XM, Channel 141. I want to hear from you. We'll start taking calls in just a bit at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. 10. We'll be back in a moment.
The Howard University Radio Network is WHUR 96.3 FM, WHUR World 96.3 HD2, student-run WHBC HD3, GlassHouseRadio.com, SiriusXM Channel 142, HBCU, and SiriusXM Channel 141, HUR Voices, Washington.
Welcome back to a special edition of the Daily Drum on SiriusXM Channel 141. This is the Insight segment. I'm Harold Fisher. Tonight, we take a look at the life and the political legacy of Maryland Congressman Elijah Eugene Cummings. He passed away this morning at the age of 68. I want to talk a little bit about that political legacy with Dr. Melanie Campbell. She is president and CEO of the National Coalition on Black Civic Participation. Dr. Campbell, thank you so much for joining us. You were just last night at the 22nd Spirit of Democracy Awards, and Congressman Cummings was supposed to be there.
Right. He wasn't able to make it because he knew he was under the weather. We did not know how imminent health was. We lifted him up, in the moment, and it's still shocking. Yeah, it's real shocking, and it's really heartbreaking, quite honestly. Yeah.
Talk to me about your constituency and how his political legacy impacted Black civic participation.
Well, He said he lived it, right, every day because he touched people every day. But I remember meeting him, and I was kind of going back, like quite a lot of folks did today, and looking and saying, when was all that? First time I met him and worked with him, and it was like in 2005 when he came and spoke to our Black You Vote leaders at Dr. Hite's building on Pennsylvania Avenue at the National Council of Negro Women. And remember him coming there and really motivating our Black You Vote leaders about the importance of civic engagement, of voting, and working on have the power of the vote. And so that's what I remember. It was my first real interaction with him. So that memory came back, and just been trying to think about all that. And we wanted to honor him because he's been fearless in this moment in history when our democracy is really under attack, and being in that powerful position that he was in with oversight for the and the way he was handling that. He was made for such a time, and he carried that as far as to this day, but his legacy will live on, I believe, in folks being able to just use him as a litmus test of how you utilize the power you have to make change.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Perry, she kind of struck a chord with me when she spoke about where we are right now politically. This is a huge loss as we are in the midst of an impeachment inquiry. Congressman Cummings was one of the chairs of a committee that has been looking into the Trump administration. And even though Nancy Pelosi is already in the midst of choosing a new chair for oversight and reform, can we expect the same kind of vigor and passion as we move through this process?
Well, certainly not. I mean, like the congressman said earlier, I mean, you cannot replace or fill the shoes of Congressman Elijah Eugene Cummings, and that includes on his chairmanship. I think what we can expect is whoever is his temporary replacement before the House votes for a permanent replacement, it's certainly going to carry the banner and be a standard bearer for what Representative Cummings sought to engender in leading that committee. But ultimately, the fire that Representative Cummings offered to the public and really calling to task the Trump administration on its various alleged illegal activities, and certainly the sketchy ones. The fire in the belly that Representative Cummings was able to so eloquently express, his oratorical skills, as we know, are off the charts. That simply will just not be replaced, and we will all miss that.
Mm-hmm. Michelle, from the perspective of a Baltimore native, talk to me about what your expectations in the wake of Congressman Cummings' passing would be for Baltimore. I mean, you're a native. You've had, dare I say, boots on the ground, or in your case, heels on the ground, and you know the people of Baltimore and what he meant to them.
Well, I have to say this. It was just serendipitous last night to be the mistress of ceremony at the Spirit of Democracy Awards last night, and for Melanie Campbell to have the foresight to know that whether we knew this or not, honoring Congressman Cummings last night, alongside myself, I was honored. Congresswoman Maxine Waters, we were all honored last night. It was a blessing, but it seems to me, even in his absence last night, I had no idea that the congressman would be making his ascension, right? But something in the spirit realm said, mention him. Mention your proud Baltimorean that Elijah Cummings was. And so even in his absence last night, I couldn't help but talk about Baltimore. I talked about how Baltimore had been besmirched by Dump. I talked about, you know, the things that were said about our city and how our congressman never shrunk about being from that city. So to put it forward, anyone that's going to come and try to continue the work of Baltimore and of its constituency has to understand that you have to be sincere about that city. Like, I think even on the days where Congressman Cummings might not have been at his best, and that was very rare, there was such a sincerity in his service that we would cover him. In other words, we already had his track record. We knew what he had already done on the ground. And so when you tried to speak against him about things about the city that weren't becoming, We were very clear. Well, here's what our representative is doing. And so anyone that's going to try to continue that legacy and that work has to understand that you have to understand that Baltimore is a city of neighborhoods. It's a city of neighborhoods. It's not your average blue collar city. It's a blue collar city with white collar attitude, with a lot of edge and a lot of spunk. And we have a very big ego. And so while Congressman Cummings carried that ego, he carried it with grace. And I think that anybody that's going to try to work with the city of Baltimore, with that district, with representing us in Congress, has to understand that you really need to know the people. And he was, like I always say, he was a man of the people. And so you can't come into that district with, of course, you may have the letters behind your name. He had letters behind his name. You can come in with a credential. You can even come in with a background of politics. But you have to have insensibility that says, I'm here for the right reasons, not as a stepping stone. And so I never felt like Congressman Cummings was using, because you brought up the notion of him possibly running for Senator Mikulski's seat. I never had the notion in all my interactions with him that he was an opportunist, that he was looking, using this as an opportunity to get to the next rung of politics. I always saw it as him being very comfortable in his skin, but being willing to do the heavy lifting when others just sought for the glamour and the glitz of public service and the life in public service. So if you're going to come and do work, be ready to get your hands dirty and be ready to get to know the best of them and so-called the least of them, because they're all the same in Congressman Cummings' eyes.
You know, one of the things, Melanie, that a lot of people will say, and even I will say, about Congressman Cummings was, despite, as Michelle said, the letters behind his name, despite all of his achievements and all of the accolades, he was a regular guy.
Yes.
And I would see him, because our listeners know I live in Baltimore. He's not my congressman. My congressman is Dutch Ruppersberger, but every time, you know, I would see him, he would, you know, constantly know not just me as a journalist, but me as a person. He would ask about my daughter, you know, all the time, and he was, you know, he was just a regular kind of guy who was very, very passionate about people. And if you've ever had an opportunity, and I'm sure you've heard this many times, Dr. Campbell, when he's given speeches, and he often talks about, for example, he talks about his father and how he got to Howard University, where he said his father, he literally drove him to campus and dropped him off and said, you know, I don't know a whole lot about this school, but I hear that it's a great place for you to get an education, so I can't help you.
He said, I took you as far as I can take you,
exactly.
As he would always say. He said, and once he got him here, he says, I've done everything I can do. But his father had this, but with that kind of eagle-eyed dedication to even something his dad didn't understand. He didn't understand higher education in the sense that he understood the proclivities and the nuances of being at Howard University. He just knew, I'm going to drop you off.
Yeah.
This is as far as I can go. And then you're going to have to do the rest.
And one of the things that I remember about him, as we were sitting here talking, the way he was a great storyteller, that he would bring you in, you know, and really, I would hear him speaking at church or speaking on Capitol Hill, and he had the power to pull you in to whatever it was, and then the passion that made you feel whatever it was. Right. And so that void that I'm feeling when I think about he's not going to be there in this moment, you know, it's a tough thing for all of us. But I believe, first of all, Michelle, thank you so much last night. We had such a great time. And when you did lift him up, it just added so much to a moment. When we woke up this morning, who knew? God knew. We didn't know.
Exactly.
But we're just glad that we were blessed to have the honor to have been able to honor him. Even as he was transitioning to be an ancestor, that we were doing that, and we'd wake up to this new day that he's no longer with us on this side of Jordan. So I that's what I remember, and I think I'll remember a lot of this. I remember seeing him at a church here, and what I've been seeing and hearing from friends and colleagues and everybody, just those stories and remembrance of somebody who just exhumed leadership, servant leadership, which is what many of us espouse to be, is yeah, I'm here to serve. Leading is serving. And he did that. He did that well. And he will be missed in such a way. But we are, again, we can't let his legacy and those others who've gone before us, you know, it's our journey that we're on to do our part in our dash. And he did it with excellence.
You know, one of the things that I found particularly touching is that more than a couple of years ago now, I guess it's been about 5 years ago, there was a young man who was the son of a friend of mine who was trying to figure out what he was going to do after high school. And his mom talked to me about it. His name is Julian. And he expressed interest in going into the United States Naval Academy. And she said, I don't know how that's done. And I said, how are your son's grades? She said, pretty good. And he's a fine young man. I said, well, she lived in Cummings District. And I said, you need to go and talk to Congressman Cummings and take your son with you. And he was speaking at Morgan State University at one of his many, many town hall meetings. And she told me that she took her son up. He was a senior in high school. And he went up and he said, Mom, I got this. And he went and talked to Congressman Cummings and told the congressman that I told him that he needed to talk to him. That young man is now an ensign in the United States Navy. He's an officer and a gentleman. And without the kind of support from Congressman Cummings, writing that letter that you need from your congressional representative, to make sure that this young man continued on the straight and narrow. And I'm so proud of that. And when he had his party, I said, here's a card. All you got to do is just, you know, sign it, say thank you. I've already put an address on it. You got to make sure that you send it to Congressman Cummings. You need to thank him and keep him abreast of what you're doing. It is so unfortunate that you've lost the congressman and he can't, in this particular case, really see the whole fruits of his labor. And he certainly will be missed. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we want to talk about what's ahead for this empty seat and the legacy of Maryland Congressman Elijah Eugene Cummings. We'll be back in a moment. Welcome back to a special edition of the Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We are taking a look at the life and the political legacy of Maryland Congressman Elijah Cummings. He passed away this morning at the age of 68. We remember that Congressman Cummings represented really one of the most diverse districts in the state. A lot of people obviously associate him with Baltimore, but he also represented a large swath of Howard County and Baltimore County. It was extremely diverse socially, economically, racially. What kind of person will the 7th District need to be in that position to do his legacy honor?
Well, it would have to be somebody who, of course, understands why it is that you do public service. Representative Cummings did public service because he genuinely believed in working on behalf of the people. For him, it was really that simple. And unfortunately, what we have today in Congress are a whole bunch of Congress folks that are more like career politicians. And while Congressman Cummings was, of course, a congressman since 1996, and you could argue is a career politician, as we've been discussing and as everyone across the world has been discussing all day, that is not who he was as a person. That's not how he engaged with everyday people. That's not how he touched not only the lives of the poor, not only the lives of children, but also the lives of LGBTQ people. I happen to be an openly gay man. He was one of the first black congressional members to come out and support a same-sex marriage. He talked about his story. It was a delay for him, but that shows you the diversity. He was willing to represent everyone in his district, and that included folks all the way in rural parts of Howard County, and of course those in the inner city in Baltimore. And those populations are different. And some are rich, some are poor, some are black, some are white, some are gay, some are straight. For Elijah Cummings, they were all his constituents, and they were all his friends.
Social justice is definitely going to have to be a big point when there is a special election. The governor has 10 days or so to make an announcement about that, and we really don't expect that we could see a special election within the next six months or so. But I think it's safe to say, Michelle, that you're going to have a ground roots person to come in to fill those shoes, because there are still issues in Baltimore that we're talking about, a crime rate that is still very difficult, a homicide rate that is very, very challenging. And, you know, even issues of gentrification, as we are seeing in D.C., are coming to Baltimore now and kind of bringing challenges to the population.
And then there are micro issues as well. And when I say micro, not that they're not important, but they're not as highlighted. So you got food deserts as well. You got demolition. You have empty lots. You have abandoned homes. You have so many other nuances that don't get as much publicity because, for whatever reasons, people have become desensitized to some of the issues. So it'll also take someone who gets that we do need to deal with the food deserts? Why is there not farm to table in every neighborhood? Why is it just in certain zip codes that we can get fresh goods from local farms that we know would be better for our communities in terms of, you know, digestion, nutrition, and lifestyle? So you got to understand that there should be farmers markets all over the district. It shouldn't just be in certain parts. And so there are micro issues that I think that someone coming in, you have to know these things. If you don't, it's not something you can just politic about. You actually have to understand it, and you have to make sure that it's something that is available to all the constituents. And even if it's not of higher importance to some of the constituents, if you can start getting people who really have enough insight and education to educate the community about things you should be wanting to see change. Because a lot of times the desensitization is so vast, you don't even know there's an issue because you've just become comfortable with it. So you need to have somebody like a Cummins who will let you know what, I live here and this ain't right. Like, literally, he will tell you, I can come out of my house and I'm going to see X, Y, and Z. But it never made him have a disparaging word or disparaging heart about his own city. I'm saying all that to say, this person has got to really know what matters to the district, what matters to that constituency. Otherwise, you're just another politician, and yeah, nobody needs that.
Yeah, the 7th District can't wait for someone to have on-the-job training. I mean, there are pressing issues affecting that district, particularly the urban areas, that he focused on and worked on every single day, and as his wife said today, until his absolute last breath. And so whoever is going to replace Congressman Cummins is going to have to be someone who already knows the district, who already knows that Baltimore is a city of neighborhoods, right? That already knows the challenges that are facing Howard County and a lot of counties that are kind of exurbs and rural areas next to kind of poor, underserving metropolitan cities. And so, you know, that person will have to be able to speak truth to power and bring folks together. You know, what one thing that Congressman Cummins was aware of was the kind of latent complacency and disillusionment occurring in the black community and across the country, particularly among black millennials. His efforts with Freddie Gray, you know, him being on the bullhorn down in the city streets, you know, late at night, talking to the folks, he was really conscious about trying to make it clear to let folks understand that he was a proud Democrat, and he was also a proud member of Congress, but ultimately he was someone who did not give up on the system, and yet he represents millions of people, 700,000 or so people in this district, but millions of folks around the country who look to him as an example of someone who's yet is positive experience, and so folks can look to people like him, and I would say like Congressman Maxine Waters, who happens to be at Howard today, and because these are people who represent their districts well, but also represent black consciousness still, and represent inner city issues, but they also are proud members of the Democratic Party. And Cummins understood that the future of the party, the future of his district, is going to require folks to get together. And while the system may not be the best, while voter suppression is continuing, nonetheless, he understood that you have to bring folks together. He was very much against the Trump, of course, presidency, in large part because he felt that would be such a stain on the legacy of this country. And he fought to his last death to make sure that all people were able to see that the political system in which we work, in which we live, it may not be perfect, but it can work if we participate.
Melanie, I want to throw out some names to you real quick and I need a quick reaction. Stephanie Rawlings-Blake, Sheila Dixon, even Maya Rocky Moore Cummins. Could they fill that space?
I'm sure they could. The one I know is Maya Rocky Moore that you mentioned, his wife, who is a leader in her own right. The one thing I did wanted to add to what I say ditto and our colleagues on the line, because at the end of the day, he never left his community.
Yeah.
He was community. He could walk with kings and be right there with folks every day. And so, as I've heard the tributes, and one of the things that I heard so many times today, he went home every night.
Yeah.
He went home every night to his district. He was also a family man. You know, he'd tell the story about what happened to his nephew.
Yeah.
So that passion was also lived experience. And I think the person who can't fill the shoes, but would need to be someone who can continue that kind of legacy.
I have got to stop you there, Maya.
Who lived there. Not wanting someone who could continue his legacy.
Melanie, I've got to stop you there, because we are certainly out of time, but I want to thank you
for
your expertise, Dr. Melanie Campbell, also Dr. Ravi Perry and Michelle. Thank you so much. We are going to leave you tonight with Congressman Cummings in his passionate own words from the chairman's seat of the House Oversight Committee. Good night.
Come in here and say, this is the first hearing. It is not the first hearing. The first hearing was with regard to prescription drugs. Remember, a little girl, a lady sat there, Miss Wortham, her daughter, died because she could not get $333 a month in insulin. That was our first hearing. Second hearing, H.R. 1, voting rights, corruption in government. Come on now. We can do more than one thing. And we have got to get back to normal. With that, this meeting is adjourned.